we are about to go into a very rapid pace of change. And I am concerned that if we don't upskill and encourage more young girls and women into technology, we could really fall behind. What do you think, in your experience, can be done? Are we making enough progress?
If we continue at the current rate of change to get gender parity at the workforce, it would take 132 years for us to be on equal footing with our male counterparts. It's 2023, and like, what the hell are we doing? This is not complicated. You need diverse voices in the room when tech is every single business, and not having half the population represented or have a voice is just not okay. With so much of the tech and the change that we're seeing, like, everyone's being in the road. Everyone. We're actually on this space in some ways where it's more even footing than we've ever experienced. It's just feeling empowered enough to take it.
Renice, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast. I am honored to have you on today. As I said before we jumped on, I was having a massive fangirl moment when I was doing my research for today's episode. We have a lot of the same passions when it comes to girls and women in tech, which we're going to dive into today. But for those listening to this right now, could you give a little bit of your background story, who you are, and what you have achieved so far? Because it is absolutely incredible. So over to you. Tell us who you are, your journey, and we'll kick on from there.
Oh, what an amazing introduction. I'm honored to be here. I hope I can live up to the to all of that. But my name is Renice, and I co-founded Visual Domain, a video production company, back in 2008. So we really exist to work with brands as their partner in production and just make the whole process of creating video marketing to be one that's really easy and really fun and really, I think, obtainable by any type of brand. When we started, it was such, like, my goodness, what a different world we lived in back in 2008. Like, video marketing was not a thing back in the day, but I had some small exposure to it in a previous role, and I had found myself basically out of work. The company I'd been working for went into administration. It was creating mobile phone websites or apps, which we would call them today, but this was a pre-iPhone era. So it was a brilliant business, great idea, just really poor timing, and unfortunately didn't make it through the GFC. So I found myself looking for what's next, and just despite all the obstacles that probably, or all the kind of more rational reasons not to start a business, I just couldn't help but wanting to jump in there and kind of begin this video production journey that I've now been on for 15 years. We've got some of Australia's biggest brands that we work with today, like Kmart, Seek, NAB, News Corp Australia. Like, there's over 600 clients that we work with, creating all different types of video content across a team of 100 across Australia. And I truly love it, even though the business is so different today from where we started back in 2008.
Wow. And you've done a lot of other things alongside building Visual Domain. But I just want to stay there for a moment, because there's a few things that I really want to pull out. The first thing is 15 years. Now, what's really interesting when I speak to a lot of entrepreneurs, and look, I'm going to put my hand up and say myself included in this, right? We do live in a world that is instant gratification, that I think a lot of people lack patience. They want things to happen yesterday. You have built this business over the course of 15 years, and you have started something, you know, when video video content wasn't really even a thing. So can you just dive into that journey? And because I'm sure, like, on reflection over the last 15 years, there's been days where you've questioned what you're doing. There's been days where there's been a struggle, but there's been days where things have just suddenly just started gaining some momentum. Take me back to those early days of building the business, what it was like, and yeah, just give us maybe a bit of an insight of what it actually took to keep going and to keep this vision alive, even on the days maybe where you were thinking, what on earth am I doing? We all have those days. It's all part of the entrepreneurial journey, right? But love to dive into that.
Yeah, no, totally. And I feel like if I had a word for my career, it would be grit. Like, it's just, you kind of got to dig a lot and just keep going. But in the early days, it's funny, like, we just had this idea and we wanted to get it off the ground, and it was no more complicated than that. And I think we had a team that built around us that, I guess, sort of believed in that same, you know, it's that real startup mentality and culture of just like, we can do it and let's, you know, create something where there's currently nothing and build it. And that was almost enough of, I think, a vision for my team and for all of us to really get behind. And it got us through any of the obstacles that hit our way of just this perseverance of this underdog of trying to make a new space in video marketing that hadn't previously existed, was, you know, this sort of phase. And then it kind of hit this turning point, you know, probably at like the, I'd say this sort of between the 3 to 5 year mark, and I'm really testing my knowledge now because that was 10 years ago, but you sort of realize that that was no longer enough to really pull people on that journey with you. And I think building a business, I mean, particularly a service business over such a long period of time, you can't do it without really brilliant people around you. And I think it's at that kind of 3 to 5 year mark where I realized the value of really articulating the vision of what we want to create and bringing people together with that. And, you know, the values of our business, what we hold really dear and how we want to achieve that vision, became of just the utmost of importance. That's actually pretty much then carried us through from that 5 to 15 year mark, truly, since we could actually articulate it. And I know it sounds really silly and daft and a bit kind of obvious, but actually being able to say what it is you want to create and how you want to do it and have others believe in that too and get on that journey, everything becomes so much clearer. And the obstacles you feel like you can overcome because you're working together on that vision and you're agreed together how you actually want to do that. So that's been probably the, you know, I can sort of see the two different phases of Vizdom. There was like startup, grind, hustle mode, which was fun, and you're in the trenches and you know, if anyone's watched Silicon Valley, of those highs and the lows, like, they're, you know, one, it's such an accurate reflection, I think, of the roller coaster that startup life. And it's funny, as you get bigger, that roller coaster doesn't stop. Like, it just keeps going, but it's just knowing what you're doing it for. And I guess having really good people along the way to do it with, that gets you through the kind of hard times. But yes, there's definitely been hard times through that. But yeah, it's that bigger purpose that I think gets us through.
You're so correct there. And I can identify moments in my own journey where if I didn't know my why, I could have very easily at that moment stopped. But it was the why, it was the purpose, it was the mission, it was the vision I had for the future that kept me going in those moments of doubt and, you know, thinking, why am I doing this? There's easier things to be doing with my life. But you've also touched upon something that is also really, really important. I think the foundation of every single business is its people, and having the right people, you know, in your team, building the business, that understand where the business is going and what we're trying to achieve. But you've grown it from a startup to 100 people. That's incredible. You know, I think when I reflect on the hiring, you know, when I've made hiring decisions, I mean, we haven't got anywhere near 100 people yet. You know, I've experienced a lot of you know, struggles that come from hiring people and building a culture. And I'm still very much working on my leadership skills. That is for sure. But what have you experienced when you've gone on that journey of building out your team? And what is it that you look for in people as well? Like, you must have quite a good eye now of what you sort of want from an employee. Like, can you identify some particular traits? So you've gone, that's what I want in this business. Anything that sort of stands out when you've made those really key hires?
I've joked about this is such a bad thing to say, but like if anyone was to ever invent like, so you can just sort of fast, but you can't shortchange time, can you? So sometimes you hire someone who on paper is just perfect, and then you realize very quickly, not the right fit here. But to answer your question, I really think it comes down to that values alignment out trumps everything. So when I'm interviewing someone, or really I think sort of looking at who even we're going to promote and, you know, take on that next level, it's the people who really embody the values of a visual domain and what we're all about, which we've got four values. So one's inspire creative grit, which just means sometimes bringing, you know, creativity and grit to your decision-making to, you know, our production team will apply it to maybe the video that they're working on, but always looking for those little 1 or 2 percenters where we can dig deep and make something special out of every situation is what's really embodied with that inspire creative grit. And you see that, you know, you can ask questions that I think kind of show those little moments where you've just had to dig that bit deeper or go that extra little step to make something better than what it would have been beforehand. So that's one that I always look for. The second is teamwork, which is a pretty self-explanatory one, but that's one we can always really, I think, sort of work out of just people who really value working with other people and know how to get the best from them, both in leadership positions, but equally as members of the team and how they want to learn and show up every day with that kind of really open mindset of collaboration and knowing that, hey, I'm really good at this, but maybe I'm not as good at that. And I want to receive feedback and be better. Like that's all kind of partnered in with that, how we work as a team and support one another. The third is to always add value. So joys of a service business, which I wish someone had told me early on, is there is no economies of scale. You sell more, you just need more people. Like you don't start magically making more money. But I love growth because I feel like we can create better opportunity for our team and for our, you know, the people that work with us through that growth. And so that's where the value lies for me. And I think anything that we do choose to do, it's always either got to add value to our clients or to our team, or it's sort of like, what is the point, particularly in our business. And lucky last is heart-led hustle. And I think that really sums up my team so bloody well because, you know, we're hustlers and you can always tell a hustler, and I love hustlers, like they're my people, but the heart-led ones, they always have care at the first, you know, at anything they're kind of pushing going ahead. It's always done with the human in mind at the other end. And I think, so when I'm interviewing people, it's really looking for moments where I can see some of those traits have come out. And the technical skill can all be taught, but, you know, a hustler's born. So you can normally spot them and figure them out. And equally in the team that we have today and who we want to promote or take to that next level, as I said, they're people who really do embody all of those values and bring them and show up with them every single day.
I love that. And I think that way you can also, when you're interviewing people, there's this open line of communication and the expectations are laid out. It's like, this is the type of culture. This is what we expect. And this is what we're working towards. And then people can easily decide if that job's for me or not. So I think the worst thing that I see happen, and I've been recruiting for over 10 years now, is that people get sold the dream at interviews. And then when they start the job, they realize, actually, this is not what I was sold on. And then that's where the problems, and then that's where the culture culture becomes toxic because you've got people coming in, it's like sliding doors, people in, people out, and that's how a business can really start falling apart. So you're absolutely right. Getting those values like locked and loaded, and then you can go out to the marketplace knowing exactly the type of people you want, knowing exactly the type of business that you want to build. And then because you're a service-based business as well, you would then attract the right clients for the business as well. But look, I'd love to sort of look, everything you're doing and saying about content, video, like if my husband was here, he would be just like wanting to pick your brain about video content, because it's something he is so passionate about, and he's upskilled himself as an editor, and he does all the editing for the podcast as well. So I just want to give him credit, because love he has literally taught himself Adobe, everything. Like, he is incredible. Like, Carl, I know you're listening to this now, so he's probably sat there with a smile on his face. But how important is that sort of whole, from a brand point of view, you know, brand awareness, video content, like why is it so important? Why is it more superior than other content from that sort of marketing piece? Because I know it is, and I've seen it work for our business. When we post video content, we get more views, we get more buyers. Why is it so powerful, do you think?
I mean, it's the only I shouldn't say the only, it's not the only, but it definitely has the biggest emotional pull. It's the most memorable. It's your opportunity, I think, to really connect with your audience, or to build an audience in almost like an easy way compared to other forms of marketing and content types. So yeah, I'm definitely a very biased person to ask, but obviously video certainly trumps them all in my books. I think what's so exciting in the industry that we've seen, the biggest shift with over 15 years, is just the landscape that we have now is so unique in the fact that people don't want to be sold to. They want to be entertained. They want to be educated. And brands creating content that are really, I think, kind of doing that, understanding their audience and providing, you know, value through their content are the ones who are doing really well with it. And I think it's actually something quite special when I reflect back on 15 years ago. And this was, you know, we were working with brands who kind of saw a video for online to be like as close as they'll get to TV. And that's all they could really compare it to, was TV was your only access to connect with an audience in this way. And now brands can almost be their own kind of publishing, you know, powerhouses in their own right through this medium. And it's actually an affordable way that, you know, otherwise, God, what am I saying? Video, I think, just definitely wins them all as far as a brand's ability to connect and build an audience. And, you know, the stats will show just how well it works at converting as well. So why wouldn't you be doing it?
Yeah, and I think ultimately it builds trust, right? I think that that's the key thing that people feel like from like a small scale of what we're doing with the podcast, they get to know myself as the host, they get to know the person that I'm interviewing. And it's like, oh, you know, just by doing a little snippet of the podcast and listening to it, it kind of draws people in, as opposed to just posting a quote from the podcast. It seems to be getting a far bigger reach and a more engagement as well. So, but like, I think what's really interesting is happening from that marketing point of view is now not everyone, but a lot more people are producing video content. So you've got to constantly just get better and better and better. And it's got to keep on being more engaging and more value to really sort of keep up and stand out in now what's a very, very competitive marketplace. But look, I'd love to dive into now, because one passion that you and I share is women in tech, girls in tech. So when did you decide to co-found Girls in Tech? How did that idea come about? When in your career did you go, I want to do something about this, I really want to bring more females into the technology industry? Was it a conscious thing? Did you wake up one day and go, I want to do this? Or has it just been a gradual build over the years of noticing the lack of diversity in technology?
Well, I I need to probably start with a bit of a history on Girls in Tech. So it was actually founded in the US back in 2006. So it's a US-led organization by a lady named Adriana. She worked in tech and lo and behold, was the only female at the table trying to have a voice that was not being heard, which is an experience I think a lot of us can really relate to. But she did something about it and something quite bold and started a global organization called Girls in Tech. So they were calling out for volunteers for their Australian chapter in 2016. And at the time, to be perfectly honest and very selfish, I think I was really looking to grow my professional network in a way that felt authentic to me, and going to some networking things, I just found like I couldn't make those sort of connections that I actually was really craving at that particular time. But, you know, putting my hand up to actually go and volunteer, I thought would allow me to work with people and connect in that deeper way. And fair to say that after going to the first volunteer kind of show, it was like I found my people just instantly. Here were people who kind of all felt the same as me, like they sort of didn't maybe have, you know, the voice or the network or kind of that professional community around them that understood the issues that they were facing. And together, it was just really nice, I think, to know that there's other people out there that felt the same way I did. So it started there. And as we started to initiate some of the more global programs into Australia and actually working with the tech community in Australia, I think it just opened up my eyes to either experiences I had had as a female co-founder, often being the only female in a room with, you know, men who were had a good sort of 10 to 20 years on me and, you know, knew everything, to have that voice heard, as well as I think just feeling like they, you know, that underrepresented person in the workplace that I would hope no one in my team had ever felt, but I felt like I wanted to be able to help them not feel that as well. So I started as a volunteer, excited that I'd found my people with the other volunteers, but then really realized what that community needed and really recognized that, hey, I think I can help them, to the point of from 2016 to today, I've my way up to be on the board and now co-managing director and really, you know, driving the types of events that we run here in Australia and what needs they're filling for the community at the moment. Sorry, my dogs are woofing in the background.
That's fine. They're loving it. They agree.
Yeah, they agree. We're all
they
boys.
They support women in tech. They're like, come on. Look, that's absolutely amazing. And look, you and I think, just to give some context as well, I run an IT recruitment company and I co-founded a sisterhood club, about 18 months ago now, basically just running events in this podcast, because I think part of the problem, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this as well, about how we can drive more diversity, especially gender diversity in technology, is we can't be what we can't see. And I think visibility is so important. And when I reflect on my own upbringing, career choices, when I was a young girl, technology was just never on the cards to me, because I didn't, it was like, oh, you could be a nurse, you could be a beauty therapist, you can go down this path. But technology was just like, in my mind, it was for men. It was not for girls. But then when I got into tech recruitment 10 years ago, I was having so many conversations with technology professionals. They were on great salaries. They were working their way up. Like, it was flexibility. I was like, this is such a fantastic career for a woman. Like, where are they? Why aren't they coming into tech? And it's always been a conscious thought I've had for the last 10 years. So the Sisterhood Club is just to help sort of bring awareness to why it's so important to elevate female voices and empower women in technology. And also, I think we can both agree that technology is the future. And if we don't close this gap between men and women, we're going to be in a situation where women are going to have to seriously quickly upskill just to stay relevant and to get jobs in the future, because we are about to go into a very rapid pace of change. And I am concerned that if we don't upskill and encourage more young girls and women into technology, we could really fall behind. So What do you think in your experience can be done? Are we making enough progress? And yeah, what is sort of the mission now for girls in tech? Like what would you like to see and achieve over the next 5 to 10 years with that?
A lot of loaded questions, but I'm here for every one of them. Love it.
I know. Sorry. I just kind of just get so passionate, excited. I just want to throw all these questions at you because I'm trying to find the answer myself, if I'm honest.
You're so right about the gender gap though. Like even this year, it was over 130 years. If we continue at the current rate of, you know, change to get gender parity at the workforce, it would take 132 years for us to be on equal footing with our male counterparts, which it's 2023. And I could say that about so many wow. different topics at the moment. Like, what the hell are we doing? But this one feels like, I mean, this is not complicated. You need diverse voices in the room when tech is every single business, and not having, you know, half the population represented or have a voice is just like, it's just not okay. And someone was actually telling me, and I got quite fired up, but a very prestigious school in New South Wales, like, would hate to think how much it costs to send your child here, don't have tech options for females, but they do for males. And I'm just like, holy hell, what are you talking about? Meanwhile, ironically, in university, females are outnumbering the guys. So females want to do it. They are there. They're starting their careers in greater numbers than their males, but they're not staying. And I think, you know, you touched on the rate of change and everything else that we're having. It's really, I think, creating an environment, you know, that is, I think, applies to that for both males and females. And I think understanding not every female, but I think generally females can be a little bit harder on themselves and what they can actually go for and will put their hand up to have a try at, or even feel qualified to put, you know, their hand up and say, yeah, I want to go and chase after that. They'll feel like they need a certain level of expertise or experience in something. And truly, with so much of the tech and the change that we're seeing, like, everyone's in beginner mode. Everyone, like, we're actually on this space in some ways where it's more even footing than we've ever experienced. It's just actually feeling empowered enough to take it and run with it. And girls in tech at the moment, this has actually been a big focus of ours. One, because we can see the need, but two, like, constantly, this is the feedback that we're getting back from our members. It's all around soft skills, and we've decided to call them power skills. So we have power skill workshops, but it's all around that, you know, imposter syndrome in the workplace, negotiating fairly, knowing what to put your hand up for. It's how to get from kind of junior to mid to senior. The actual volume of voices that are saying, I have no idea how to tackle that, is at an all-time high since COVID, truly, that I've seen. I've been doing it since 2016. I feel like now we seem to be almost too afraid to put our hand up at a time where it's the best opportunity to put our hand up. So from a girls in tech perspective, I think we're really trying to create an environment and an empowerment for women to actually do just that and put their hand up, educate them on how to have these conversations, connect them with people that are doing it, that they feel that they can be vulnerable with and actually talk to why they're not now. And I'm also seeing a new market and a new gap for us in the different stages of women that we're actually, you know, talking to at Girls in Tech and making events for. It used to be a lot of kind of that junior to mid female that most of our events were definitely angled at, but we've had a lot more senior women come to events because, lo and behold, feel the exact same way. Like, they're trying to get from here to here and don't know how to have that conversation. We had an executive Women of Tech dinner a few weeks ago, and I don't even know how the topic started, but we started talking about menopause and just the whole unique set of experience that you come to work with going through something so big that half the population are going through and you feel like you can't talk about.
Correct.
We actually just talked about it and figured out how can we go back to the workplace and just, you know, be able to acknowledge it and have an open kind of conversation about it. And when we're having a rough day, actually being able to voice it, which should be, you know, available to all of us, men and women. I know men aren't going through menopause, but they've got their own stuff. It's just how can we bring our most authentic self to work in our career in a way where we feel we can grow either professionally or just as an individual. That's really what we're targeting. And so many of the conversations are focused around topics that seem to have so many people stuck. It's universal. And I think if there's a takeaway of this for all the women that are just starting in their career, like you're so not alone. Like senior women are feeling the exact same way. And we can actually all empower each other and support one another and step up to this challenge. Like we've got it. It's just feeling like someone's in your corner cheering you. And there's plenty of women doing that.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy. Oh, that was so good. So good. And you're so right about the menopause because, so one of the most popular episodes on this podcast so far is an episode literally around women going through the menopause and how that impacts their career. Because it is such a large portion of the working world, especially for women. It's like this is massive community and we just don't speak about it. And I was saying on that podcast as well about, I remember vividly my mum going through it and the shame, like she didn't want to talk about it, but like, you know, she would just be sat at the dinner table and all of a sudden have a hot flush and, you know, all of these things that she went through. And she ended up, you know, driving off one day to the doctors to get some HRT because she just couldn't hack it anymore. But there was also no real like support there for her when I sort of really reflect back. So it's something that I've always been aware of because I think my mum really struggled going through it. And I know so many women have really struggled with it. So it's really interesting because we think that, you know, when we're early days of our career, we look at women who are more experienced and mature and they think, oh, they've got it all together. And actually everyone's still trying to figure it out and everyone's winging it and everyone's just trying to do their best. But if we can come together and support one another, that's how we're going to grow and that's how we're going to make change. But it's something I am incredibly passionate about. But yeah, menopause is just one of those topics that is just not discussed enough. And also you mentioned imposter syndrome. I see and hear a lot of stories of women when they go through the menopause that actually imposter syndrome then hits them the most because all these changes are going on. They're getting foggy headed. There's lots of symptoms that really impact their ability to think on their feet. And, you know, one woman was saying to me the other day, she was in a boardroom meeting and she was doing a presentation. She completely lost her train of thought. And she just felt, she started to really doubt her abilities. But all it was is just, she was basically just having a hot flush. And she just was like, what is happening to me? What's happening to me? So if we're aware of these things in the corporate world and women are taught to just go, oh yeah, this is what it is. It's not, you know, it's not a big deal. This is how you handle it. We're not going to get the shame and the embarrassment and the panic of what it means for our careers. So you're so right. And it's just, it's just such an important conversation to have. So, but I love the way you've reframed soft skills to power skills as well. I'd love to really go into that because there's a reason why this podcast is called Career Confidence, because I believe that ability to believe in ourselves is the foundation upon which everything else is built upon. And I'm sure you wouldn't be where you are today without a level of self-belief. So firstly, how have you personally gone about building your own levels of self-belief? And what advice would you have for those that are struggling with that in their careers and lives right now?
You are so right. There are so many people who are genuinely struggling from it. They hold themselves back. I think women, I've noticed even just in negotiations and working with my team, I feel like women tend to negotiate with themselves before every situation, before they even come, you know, start. Like you're talking about pay and you want X, you'll say, oh, I can't ask for that. That's too much. And so you've already talked yourself down to Y before you've even walked into the room, and then you'll get talked down again.
Yeah.
You know, you don't ever just go in and ask for what you want. And we do that with every little part of our life. And look, I definitely felt imposter syndrome on a whole new level at the start of my career. I didn't have a network, and hence where Girls in Tech, I think, was really coming into it for me of women who were leading and had their own business, or friends even. Like, I just didn't have that exposure. I felt like when I'd walk into rooms, I wasn't ever addressed. It would always be my business partner who was male who would get looked at, and I would just get overseen. And I'm thinking, I've always been the CEO and effectively the one in charge and leading, and yet I couldn't actually get the attention of the room. And I don't know how it happened or if it was an aha moment or what it was, but it was actually producing a video with a very successful business leader who's now chairman of his board. And, you know, they said, well, what is it like to be chairman? He's like, well, what does being a chairman even mean? Like, chairman's like nothing really. It's just a title, but I'm a leader, and people are looking to me to lead and to represent them in the room. And so that's something I take, you know, with a lot of weight, and I really take that responsibility on. And it just clicked on me of like, I'm the CEO and I represent my team of just incredible people, and I know what I can say on their defense is the right thing. Like, no one's better equipped to go in there and bat for them than I am, because I care about it so much. And it was just that shift in my head of just like, my job is to be the leader and to be their voice in the room. And it just shifted the way I presented myself in a meeting. And look, to say I was doing it for me probably wasn't accurate. I could do it for the team, but I couldn't do it for myself. And I think maybe for other women, when they're starting and trying to find their voice, if you can't do it for you, which is a shame, because we should be able to do it for ourselves, no one else is going to do it for us. But I know I couldn't, so I get it. It's finding that person or that cause or that kind of reason of why you need to find that voice, even if it's for someone else, so that you get it. And then you just find yourself stepping into it, and you really lean into that role, because at the end of the day, you know, now I can say I'm CEO, and yes, I have to set the strategy and lead the team through things, but I have to do that for them to ensure we've got a sustainable business and that we can be the best at what we do. If I'm not bringing my best, how can I expect them to? That's a very long-winded answer. My apologies.
So powerful. No, it was perfect. It's like my, you know, layered questions. It's just when you get passionate about something, you just kind of go, what about this? What about this? But one thing I think that you illustrated there is that you almost had to become, you had to step into that role. You had to become that person. And there were some character shifts that you had to make. And that just doesn't happen quite overnight. And I think one thing that I've noticed in my own journey to sort of building that self-confidence is it's first and foremost, it's having the courage to use my voice. And it's just these small little wins that I make that start stacking the evidence that I can do this. I have got this. I am capable. And I think it's so easy when we're sort of building the confidence and we're slowly stacking the evidence to then something happens and then we it all tumbles down. So in your own sort of journey there, as you sort of stepping up into that, and all of a sudden you were like an empowered CEO, you're like, I'm representing this company, I'm representing these people. On those days where things weren't quite going the way you wanted them to go, because this is when I've always noticed imposter syndrome comes up. If I make a mistake at work or something hasn't gone the way I want it to go, I start doubting my abilities. They're the days that it matters the most to make sure you don't spiral back down. So on those days where self-doubt comes up, and it still does for me, and I'm sure it does for you, do you have a process that you can kind of talk yourself out of it and go, actually, I'm not going to listen to that inner voice. I'm not going to listen to her, and keep making sure that you're making these strides and continuing to grow?
I think where my head goes when things go wrong, because things go wrong, right? And, you know, we've had an idea and it hasn't panned out the way we thought it would, or, you know, something's been communicated poorly and people have sort of taken, you know, run with something in the wrong direction. That's the wrong direction. You think, God, I've really botched this up, or I haven't communicated this well. I think it's always really good just to kind of step out of it for a second and realize that pretty much every successful person in the world has been in this situation. Whatever situation you're finding yourself in, where you've made a wrong call, or you've, you know, whatever the situation, successful people have all been there. It's how they deal with it and how they overcome it that sets them apart. And so whenever you're finding yourself in this self-doubt, and I don't think it matters how big it is, or how, you know, you feel like you're just a failure at something, or it's not quite working, that is not the definition of you as a leader or as a, you know, a professional in your work environment. It is 100% how you then handle it. And it's, I mean, it's the same message I would give to my kids. Like, we all make mistakes, but it's how we overcome them and grow from them that defines us. And I think as much as we can keep that in the top of our mind when these things come up, of like, that's not the definition of me, but what I make of it next, my next move, that's what is. And it requires being uncomfortable. It means going into conversations you'd probably rather avoid and not have. But, you know, being, I think, really true to yourself in those moments is where the growth comes from as well. So thinking about that when you're in those situations, of not wallowing at what is and what's happened, but really focused on what can this become, and where can I redefine myself from this experience? Because there's always a way.
And I would honestly say that that's the mindset that has enabled you to do what you've done. Because from speaking to quite a few business owners, entrepreneurs, I always look for patterns. I'm always trying to figure out, what is it? Why are some people go on to build Australia's biggest, you know, video marketing company? And why do some people struggle their entire lives? What is it? I'm fascinated by it. But I think the one thing, the one pattern, the one string that sort of ties everything together is that bounce back ability, is that resilience, is that grit, is how you move forward and reframe failures. Because as long as you fail forward and you just keep going, that seems to be what, from what I'm witnessing from having these amazing conversations, the key element to a lot of these successful people, yourself included. So would you agree with that? Or would you say there's anything else that you, when you look back throughout your entrepreneurial journey, that you go, ah, actually it was that, or was this and that? Like, could you pinpoint a few things that you think lead to success?
No, I think you're 100% right. I think resilience and grit is such a big part of the DNA of most founders, and of, you know, even I think successful leaders, of just that perseverance. And the other one I'd say is also just that ability, I think, to call it when you need to as well, of, you know, when do you not keep pushing, and when do you actually take a different sidestep? And sometimes I think, you know, we're so focused on an outcome, and, you know, we're big thinkers. We're thinking of where we want to be in a few years' time. It's that ability to actually shift and change that's so much a part of it as well, and really being able to question, is this still the right move? is this something that I should be this passionate about and persevere with, or do I actually just keep moving, is another big part of it as well. And without a doubt, though, I think it's also just staying really authentic to yourself and what, you know, you want to be known for. It's probably the most, darker sort of way to look at it. But someone told me, like, write your professional obituary. Like, how do you want people to remember you? And I think if you sort of just think about, you know, what I want people to look back, oh, she worked really hard and then she gave up, it is probably not where I'd want to be.
Yeah.
Or she pushed everyone to just their limits and people were so stressed out working for her. That's certainly not what I want to be either. So it's just really, I think, being able to take a step back and think about where you want to be and how you want to do it that feels right to you, and just your reason why is so important in that kind of cocktail of resilience.
Incredible, amazing. And yeah, I'm sure people listening to this will get a lot from that. But just to tie obviously the conversation all together, I'd love to go sort of just back quickly to the whole girls in tech, women in tech piece, because it is something that you and I share a huge passion for. So what's next for girls in tech? Like let me ask you a better question. What can we do as individuals, as corporations, as businesses, universities, schools, to try and encourage more gender diversity and balance when it comes to technology? And why, in your opinion, is it so important?
So I think it's almost like such a unique set of circumstances and problem as to why there aren't more female representation in different workplaces, industries and different businesses and different stages of career journeys. And I think the biggest thing we can do is honestly start conversations with the people in these unique environments and understand why, because it's so common that I know I see, you know, companies that are very committed to empowering their female team and growing their female team, but are having separate conversations, or it's in their messaging where it's actually not supporting women. And it could be the working hours. It could be listening to what the unique set of circumstances that females need to feel like they're supported and can grow. And these conversations need to start, I think, in the workplace by everyone. I think allies, every member of the team needs to be able to actually have real meaningful conversation where we listen to one another, because, you know, we create events and we really try and, I think, you know, create a safe space where these conversations can be had with people who are going through them as well. But what do you do with that? Like, everyone leaves on a high, they feel really great. But how do you actually take that back to your workplace and actually bring on that change? And I think, you know, next year, it's really about how we can bring those conversations to the workplace and actually start to uproot what are the issues or concerns that it and not seeing females stay in these, you know, often incredible, very committed workplaces that have got a genuine, you know, care in their female employees and wanting to see them succeed. They honestly just don't know how, and they're not talking about it. How are we going to figure it out without starting these conversations?
100%, and it's the million-dollar question that I'm having with my clients, because they're saying to me, we want to hire more women into our business, but then diversity without inclusion and belonging is never going to work, because you're going to place I'm going to place a female into your business and she's going to go in there for 3 months and want to leave. So we need to get the internal structures and culture piece right before we can then start going out and attracting women into our business, because otherwise, is again, that's going to create even a far worse culture. And then your company is going to get a bad name for itself. And as the company that, you know, isn't a good place for women to work, when actually it might just be simple things of just changing a few things, getting the leadership team on board or looking into your policies and things. And then that might just be the shift that is needed to then, when you do hire diversity and women into your business, they stay. Because the other thing that I was reading the other day is that women are actually coming into technology, but leaving the industry in droves as well.
Huge numbers. Which is 70%, yeah. I think, are leaving, which is like, these are people who have gone in higher education, studied, are clearly passionate about it, but are walking away. We've got to be addressing that. And it's not, I genuinely don't believe these are made in all the issues we're dealing with in the world right now. This one feels within reach that we should be able to have a meaningful conversation where we listen and we speak and we can make some change. I've got a golden retriever at my window who's sooking, and I'm praying that it's not coming through on the microphone feed, but he's literally next to me in the outside window going, what are you doing?
That's hilarious. What are you doing? Hi, can I get involved? But listen, honestly, it has been an absolute joy having you on today. And look, I think ultimately where I sit with it all is it's conversations like this that need to be continue to take place. It's organizations like Girls in Tech, and hopefully the small thing that I do is Sister Club, and even just having conversations day to day with women that I'm placing into organizations and making sure that they're going in, they're using their voices. You know, like, for example, had a woman the other day that was almost trying to talk herself out of a position. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, and I just called it out straight away. I was like, listen, you are so capable. You have got this. You've got all the skills. I'm putting you forward for this role. And then I rang up the client. I said, listen, this is why you need to interview this incredible woman for this, this, and this, and this. And guess what? She went in and she got the job.
I love that.
And that in just my small way. I was like, I'm getting her in front of this client. But like, she just needed somebody just to kind of go, listen, you are incredible and you deserve this job and you deserve this salary, because this is what it's paying and this is what it's worth and you're worth it. And it's just all she needed just to hear sometimes. I think we just need to be having these conversations. So in my own small way, day to day, that's what I do to try and encourage, you know, the women that I work with and place to have more confidence and belief in their ability. And on a grander scale, we need organizations like Girls in Tech and just keep, I think, as many people that can be involved and use their voices and support missions like Girls in Tech, Sister Club, you know, Girls Who Code, all of them, they all have their place and they're extremely important. The more people can get behind them, the more change that we're going to make. So it's been incredible having you on. Final question, where can I send people to find out more about yourself, Girls in Tech? Where do you like to hang out the most?
I think definitely LinkedIn.
Same.
Always happily talk to anyone about either video or technology or female workforce and how we can all be advocates for them. But I love hearing that story and what you did, because I think it's if we all did that for three people we knew or something like that, my God, wouldn't the world be a better place?
Yeah, correct. If anyone needs a pump up, just come and chat with me, because I'm quite good at pumping people up, I think. But listen, thank you so much. It's been incredible. And thank you so much for everyone who's listened today. Please share this episode. It's really important that we get these conversations out there. And I can't wait to follow Girls in Tech and support that mission as much as what I can as well. So thank you for coming on today, Renee. It's been incredible having you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy these episodes, the number one thing you can do to help us grow and keep spreading our mission and message is to hit the subscribe button. And if you have time, give us a quick rating. Appreciate each and every one of you who tune in every week. And we look forward to bringing you many more episodes this year. Take care.